So how are things going out there, do you reckon? Out there in the big bad world? Good? Not so good? The real world? Good? Not so good? And the Christian gospel, who out there needs it in the real world? My slightly eccentric Uncle Tom reckons people aren't interested in our message, in the Christian faith and its challenge. He came to the view that they think they're managing fine without benefit of clergy, without reference to God, faith, church, Christianity. He became pretty disillusioned towards the end. My Uncle Tom, who used to be such a keen evangelist, disillusioned about the whole notion of evangelism, outreach, Christian mission. Because out there, he thought, in the big bad world, no one cares. But it's hard to escape a sense that all is not well in a society sinking in the quicksand of drugs and violence, struggling with a crisis of values, a society in deep trouble, sick from an alienation recognised by politicians and pundits alike, a community certainly felt by many to be disturbed, delinquent, and frankly, a bit scary. And we know it's not the whole story, but it's a fair chunk of the story. There are good and wonderful things about our modern world, yet there is recognisably and undeniably a kind of mood around, a culture of irresponsibility filters through all aspects of human experience, and the demand for now, instant and constant gratification of the pleasure principle endangers the robustness of the human spirit and threatens to drag society into a quagmire of cynicism and defeat. No one needs to make it up or overstate it to make the point. We listen, we look, we read, we know. We look out on the sometimes bleak landscape of our times and we sense so much pain and brokenness around us, a deep desire that things be different, a kind of longing for something precious that's been lost or mislaid amid the moral anarchy and the shallowness. As the global crises deepen and things people do to each other reach a new crescendo of horror, we sense the struggle of the human spirit for some breathing space in the fog of materialism, vulgarity and brutality. In this context, in this reality, we know our calling. Paul tells us, it's simply this, to hold out the word of life, to offer the gospel, hold out the word of life. To whom? To this world, to people ensnared in its many lies and seduced by its many deceptions, to people drowning in a sea of despair, to a society that can sometimes seem to be roaring like a drug-crazed joyrider towards the abyss, to that world, our world, we are called to hold out the word of life. All too often, all too recently, you've seen pictures of workers on a long-awaited aid truck handing out food to the outstretched hands of men, women and children desperate for nourishment. The world we inhabit needs the word of life with such urgency and desperation. Our job is to offer it to them, bring it to them. To this we dedicate ourselves as the living church of the living Lord. But what is that word of life? Well, certainly we should be clear what it's not. We should be sure that we're truly offering people the word of life and not some false man-made construct that in the end deceives and enslaves them rather than liberates and redeems. And let's be clear, much as we love it, we're not primarily in the business of sustaining and promoting the institution of the church. We have to stop looking in at reviving the structures of the church and the institutional shape we've grown comfortable with and feel such loyalty towards and the kind of way it is that we like. The gospel is not the church. The church is not the gospel. Nor is banging on about morality our business. Down through the centuries, ministers have thundered from the pulpit about this moral quirk and that ethical issue. No wonder people are confused into thinking that the Christian gospel is nothing more than a culturally rooted highway code for preserving social cohesion. Nor is holding out the word expecting people to embrace great swathes of Christian dogma. We seem to have wanted over the years to lay a great sack of religious jargon and theological technicalities on people's backs, religious creeds and codifications, that mean little or nothing to those scrabbling just to the edges of faith for a word of meaning for their life. It's not our job to dump a whole load of required, ready-made religion on people who are able only to be pilgrims and want to be allowed to be pilgrims. Nor is the thrust of the Christian gospel merely a collection of folk wisdom and self-help strategies to be chosen from among a whole range of such tools for living, clichés, platitudes and folk tales, the kind of soppy religiosity that purports to offer how to survive solutions for life. They may be interesting and intriguing, but that's not the word of life that the hungry people cry out for. They want bread. We cannot offer them a stone. They cry for fish. We ought not to give them a snake. For the word of life, the core of the gospel, is Christ himself. We have no other solution, answer, hope to offer. Christ in all his brokenness and mystery, in all his compassion and love, not a creed, not a concept, not an idea, not a brilliant insight. Christ himself. This is the word we offer to those who need him so much. And the truth is, we have nothing else. We have nothing else. But how is that to be done, and who's to do it? We are often in the church like the mice, reckoning that the solution to the problem of the cat chasing them and catching them is to put a bell round its neck. Great idea. And the mice feel good about that till someone says, "Hey lads, but who's going to do it? Who is going to hold out the word of life?" There is still something of an assumption that somehow this is the job of the professional, the official spokespersons of the Christ, the Pope, the Archbishop, the clergy. This is what they're paid to do. Let them do it. This is why we pay for people in offices at church headquarters. Yet in our hearts, we know that holding out the word of life is about individuals doing that. One-to-one sharing, not one-to-one George Street. That's a Church of Scotland pun. Only the commitment of committed individuals will do the trick, achieve the aching aspiration. In our hearts, we know that somehow this is the business we are all in, holding out the word of life, with the same naturalness that we would give food to a hungry person who came to our door, rather than assume that feeding hungry people is something someone else does on my behalf. We know that coy won't do, that ignorance is unacceptable, timid is betrayal, silence is not golden. Often in defence of our silence, we quote all those bizarre examples of cold calling and foot-in-the-door evangelism, and we insist, we don't want to seem like the Jehovah's Witnesses, but we murmur, "My faith is a private and a personal thing." Yet all that is being drawn to our attention by the challenge to hold out the word of life is that where we are, within the circle of connections that are natural and organic to our life, we have the chance and the responsibility to hold out the word of life in a way fitting to the context, in words that are real for us, not rattling on doors to cold call the gospel to strangers who have no reason on earth to trust us because they don't know our name and we don't know theirs. But we all have a network of connections. Children entrusted to our care, at whose baptism we've promised to bring them up in the Christian faith. Grandchildren, in whose life we may be the only Christian influence. Nephews and nieces, husbands and wives, colleagues and friends. That's easy for me to say. It's my job to talk Christianity. It's kind of expected of me. For me, talking the faith is an occupational hazard as well as a privilege and a responsibility. But each one of us has a territory that is well populated with people who make up that searching, needing society that we spoke of, that we know has so many questions and so much emptiness that Christ can fill. We sense their pain. We feel their confusion. They have their questions. We have the answer in our Christ, who is the word of life. They have the need. We have the message. How about this? Would it not be terrible for someone to go through their life in the deepest need of the spiritual blessing that faith in Jesus Christ brings, and we say nothing to them? They are entitled to look at us through the grubby lens of the wasted, lost years and say, "Why did you never tell me? Why did you never say there was another way? Why did you not introduce me to your Christ, whose love would have saved me from all this, whose life would have filled my life and made it new? Why did you stay silent? Why did you hold that word of life to yourself when I needed it so much? Why did you say nothing? Why did you not tell me?